Welcome to Juice Podcast. I'm Emily Harmon, and today I'm joined by one of my dearest friends,
Nikki DeVries.
I was like about to say Nikki Fletcher. I know, but I was like, you're a married woman now.
I know, I didn't, to be honest, I didn't really know what name to use myself. I'm leaning into the new one.
It's a very nice surname, actually.
Yeah.
So, Nikki, you've been listening to the podcast from day one, actually. And obviously, you know Gwen.
Yes.
As well. And I don't think you've met Jamie yet.
I don't think so, but I have obviously already listened to his new foray into this world.
And why are you on the podcast today? Why are you joining me today?
Well, I mean, obviously, as you know, but obviously the people listening don't know, this is basically up there with one of my bucket list wishes.
Some people want to skydive.
I want to be on the Juice Podcast.
Well, it's quite funny because you used to say, I wish you'd send out the bottle of wine so I could drink along and feel like I was actually at the table. And I was like, oh, if we could only do that and send wine to everybody that listens to the podcast, that would have actually been really cool.
I do like listening to it because I do always feel like I'm there, because obviously I know Gwen anyway. And like when I used to listen to it, I was like, oh, I just feel like I'm in the room with you guys without the benefit of the wine. Now I get both things. Albeit without the third person's company, but you know, you're my hero for wine chat. So yeah, I feel like I've made it in life now.
Shut up. And Nikki, for everyone that's listening, what do you do? Because I actually feel like, especially for the UK-based listeners, there might be some people that are quite interested in what you do.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So I was a fashion buyer on sort of the UK high street for the largest part of my career, but I've switched recently into something. I've side hustled my way into a full-time hustle. So I've made my full-time job essentially my own business, which is a mishmash. It started off being all about vintage clothing. There's still very much a heartland of vintage, but I've moved into kind of reworking vintage textiles and items, so like dead stock inventory, to give it a second life. My business is called Second Stories, so that's quite nice. And I'm also just now, I've manoeuvred into or added to my remit made-to-order clothing, which is quite exciting. So,
Of which I am very lucky also to be wearing something from your shop.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a cap, which has got I love caps that have funny slogans or funny things on them. And it says, pass me the fucking vino. So for those of you that follow Juice on Instagram, you'll get to see both me and Nikki in the cap. And we'll have to take a picture of the cap as well with a little close-up and add that in as well, so people can get their own if they want to, because I'm going to be wearing that very proudly around for the whole of this summer.
To be fair, the caps have been really popular, and I started those last year sort of on a whim, actually also sort of inspired by you and myself, because you remember I had one, and then you, last time we went away, you were wearing your own like little slogan cap, and I was like, I feel like there's a market for like slogan caps. And I managed to find a dead stock inventory source, so you know, it's reusing existing materials, which is lower in environmental impact, which is quite important to me, really. That's important. But yes, probably a little bit boring and overlong there. Sorry.
I don't think it was boring. I love what you do.
It's a side note, though. We need to talk about wine. This is what people are listening for.
Well, we can, but I also want people to know you and
a bit
about what you're doing, because I think it's cool. But we'll add any of the social media handles and your website at the end of the podcast. So if that did pique anyone's interest, you'll be able to find out more at the end.
Yeah,
so
give me a follow.
So if the wine chat's boring, stay for that. And so today's episode, we're actually going to be talking about Sicily a little bit, and a couple of producers that I import through my business in Germany that I co-own, called Sublime Wine, who I believe these three producers that we're trying today are some of the exciting producers that some are a bit more established, but some that are like very new, very emerging. So I think it'll be quite cool. And I think when people think of Sicilian wine, they may have a completely different idea about it than what these wines represent. I mean, all of these wines are going to be a little bit maybe lighter, fresher, energetic.
Yeah. Do you know what? That's really weird. And also, because we have already had a mini taste, I'll be honest, before.
We're already on the first wine.
Yeah.
A mini taste. There's half a bottle of wine left in the bottle.
Because actually, one of my favourite parts of the podcast when I'm listening is listening to the uncorking and the pouring of the wine. That's like ASMR heaven for me. However, I'm sure we'll end up doing that. I was surprised initially by that fact of the freshness, but I just also want to say, from my point of view, I'm obviously not like a wine pro, but when I've looked at or bought Sicilian wines, I'm actually also quite surprised by how modern the labels are and like the visual look of them, whereas I feel like I've associated Sicilian wines with being quite traddy looking,
yeah,
and heavy,
yeah,
in taste, but also like, yeah, maybe not. This looks much more innovative, fresh, and I wouldn't have thought that.
Actually. It's quite cool you said that, because that's kind of how I assume people perceive. And we didn't do a briefing on this podcast.
No.
Totally doing what we do on every podcast, which is just shooting from the hip and having a rough direction of where we're going, which is why there's often a lot of tangents. But yeah, the first wine that we're drinking, maybe we dive right in, mm-hmm, to what we're drinking first, is from Agricola V&B, which, yeah, is spelled like V-I-N-B. And these guys are really like one of the newest kids on the block. So we're drinking the Zappa Iputa Frappato 2022. This is the second vintage that they produced. And in 2022, they produced 2,000 bottles in total. So really microscopic production. The winery was set up by two friends, Biagio and Vittorio. That's the name, like Agricola V, like V-I for Vittorio, mm-hmm, N. And B, Biagio. And that's actually them.
I was just going to ask if that was them.
Yeah. And Biagio, it was very bizarre because I met Biagio many times at different wine fairs over the years. And he was working for a legendary estate called Cos. You probably would have tried the wines.
Yeah. And the bottles quite...
They're the stumpy kind, yeah, of bottles. Exactly. And anyway, he was working for them. But before that, he was head sommelier in London at Thera at Claridge's. He worked with Anna Wilde, who you also know, a.k.a. my wife. And for people listening, not my actual wife, but my symbolic wife. And he was the head sommelier there. So we actually met maybe like 8 or 9 years ago when he was working there.
So he's really like... shifted.
Yeah, exactly, a pivot. And he's from the area. And weirdly, it was like when I did a visit to Sicily with my business partner and friend Arlene last, 2023, January or February, we were in Sicily. We went to see the winery. And as we were tasting, I started to recall this memory where I had I had drinks at Thera by myself. And the sommelier came over and he poured a glass of wine and it was from Etna, from Eduardo Torres Acosta.
Oh, wow.
And then I remembered the wine and I put it together. And I'm like, oh my God, that was you, Biagio. And as I was about to tell him, he said, when you came in, I poured you, and I was like, Eduardo Torres Acosta. We did this thing when we were finishing each other's sentences, and Arlene looked at us like, what is going on now? Yeah. And she was like, wine people, their memories. It's so weird. So we've actually kind of had this like kind of ongoing relationship that we didn't kind of know about, but it's now led to the point where we import the wines. Anyway, going back to 2022 vintage, 2,000 bottles. They just made this red, which is 100% Frappato, and then a rosé made from the Nero d'Avola grape. We're going to try the Nero d'Avola next from a different producer. But yeah, they are farming completely biodynamically. And now in 2024, when we record this, they're working with 4.5 hectares in total. They're planting new vineyards themselves, a little bit in the Vittoria area, but also further inland, mm-hmm, in Chiaramonte, which is a really beautiful place. And I think they're going to be one of the top producers. So this wine is made completely in stainless steel. There's no filtration, no fining, and there's no sulfur, not even added to the wine.
That's interesting.
And I think for me, that's what's like very interesting about this wine, is because I'm not somebody who necessarily seeks out sulfur-free wines, but I think there's amazing purity to the wine. Like, it's not funky at all, is it?
No, but maybe, I guess as well, I'm not an expert on this at all. I'm the novice foil to you. I think for me, it's like, I'm surprised straight off how like fresh and juicy it is.
Yeah.
And it kind of, to me, has like that whole like early field blend, like maybe even like a bit like early Beaujolais Nouveau type vibe, like fresh.
Yeah.
There's not a lot else going on there in terms of like crazy heavy flavour,
yeah,
but it just feels really juicy. Delicate.
Yeah. I mean, so it's 11% alcohol. This isn't picked early. So they pick the grapes in October.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and so there's a number of reasons why I think that is. I'm not... my background's not in wine science, so I definitely couldn't speak about it like others might. But what's very specific about here is that you have these wonderful soil types where you've got a lot of red earth, but like on limestone.
Yeah.
So you get a good freshness. The limestone also holds like a good amount of water when they do get rain. And I think also just the type of farming that they're doing. Also, in like months like August where it's extremely hot, the plant just stops because it goes into sort of heat stress as well. So I think that kind of delays a little bit
the ripening.
Yeah. Yeah, and as long as the grapes aren't getting burnt, I think it's not too problematic. But the boys would think would be able to speak to that a little bit more than me. But
there's still like loads of flavour in there. It's just without being
heavy.
Overpowering or heavy. And it's so... I really like a kind of chilled red or like a summer red. And for me, this would be perfect. Like a hot sunny day on your balcony or anywhere
which
else.
Which is where we've been today drinking this. I think what for me is very interesting as well is Frappato. Obviously, Ariana Occupinti being the most famous producer for Frappato, followed by Kos. And, you know... Both these winemakers that are part of this project worked at them. Biagio was at Kos and Vittorio worked for Ariana for a bit. I think what their style is like very light, very delicate, very pure, quite focused, precise.
Yeah,
discreet.
That makes sense.
Yeah, quite discreet. And I think maybe it's not a style for everybody if you want like sort of chunkier wines. But I really like that you notice that there's still complexity there though, even though it's like more subtle and lighter.
Yeah, like it's not just one level. There are different flavors.
Yeah, like lots of floral notes, like geranium almost.
Mm.
These beautiful red fruits, but like herbaceous notes that are there, and then that kind of salty lime through the wine. So it's beautifully made wine. By two people who really care about what they're doing and I think have a lot of potential in the future. So I really feel like watch this space because it's not in a lot of markets at the moment. But yeah, they're good people doing interesting stuff.
Yeah,
so
it
new
is
guys
really
on
tasty. Mm. And it's quite like, it has got quite a decent acidity level as well. So it's not...
And it's natural.
Yeah, and it's not like, it's refreshing. That's why it's refreshing, I guess.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it doesn't feel abrasive. However, I think sometimes when people try, at least this is the feedback I've been getting for a long time, is like when I used to be on the restaurant floor and when I do consumer events from time to time, still there seems to be this like idea that intensity, heaviness, a level of alcohol, a level of oakiness in a wine equates more value.
Yeah.
And I think still there's got to be a little bit more work done from maybe the people selling wine to the people buying wine to just let them know that like, this wine is equally as complex. It's equally as interesting. It's just quieter. Like it's not the loudest person in the room.
Yeah.
But there's still very interesting facets to the wine.
And the reason I mentioned about like the sort of refreshingness, the acidity without like that's, I'm not saying it's like citrusy or anything like that, but just like tasting it is because for me, I think sometimes immediately, particularly when I think Sicilian wines that I've had previously, kind of think it could be quite heavy and cloying and quite
soupy,
dense and and like you just don't actually like, for me that's a breath of fresh air, that refreshingness, but it's not one note.
I agree, and I think this is though a trend that we have been seeing for a long time. When I say long time, like the last decade, so it's not that long, but long enough that wine buyers have been seeing it. I don't think it's trickled down to a consumer level. You're not the average consumer, right? Like you are someone that's got a lot of wine friends that you get exposed to.
I have done some of my tick, those, whatever.
You've done WSET 2, 1 and 2. And like also you've got like a lot of friends like who are quite
I spend a lot of time with you and other
me,
people.
Jamie Good, Jan Konecki. Like you've got good wine friends. And also you're a foodie. So you're not like, you know, how many nights have we been at Noble Rock drinking wine together?
I know.
With Mark and stuff. So it's like we've been exposed to a lot of great wines together.
Yeah, which I'm forever grateful for.
Yeah, so you're you're a more educated person, even though you don't work in wine. So I think what you're probably looking for is a little bit different. But I think, this is... I love that you like that it's refreshing. I'm very, very... Very happy
about
that.
That's quite my bag, though, to be honest, as well, as we get into warmer weather. Like, I do like red wine. It's one of, I don't know if I had to have a favourite colour, maybe that would be my favourite. But then, like, I like different levels of it throughout the year. And also, to be honest, 11%, it's not, like, too boozy to be a crazy drink. And as you're getting into warmer weather, you don't want to feel like you're getting knocked out by something, do you? I mean, you know. Well, not personally.
But yeah, I mean, I started trying to say it before and then I got distracted with my thoughts. But in Europe, the last 10 years, a lot more producers are being more gentle with their winemaking. Mm. Farming grapes a bit better. Not using an abundance of oak. You know, oak has kind of really gone out of fashion in, let's say, the wine nerd world. And if you speak to a lot of the top producers, they want to express the fruit, they want to express the place.
Yeah.
So you don't want to, you know, cover that with oaky flavors necessarily. And I think that's a wine that's the Sapu Puta. It's like very transparent. Like
that's it's a good
the
word.
Fruit has nowhere to hide. You know, like you actually just you taste the soil, you taste the grape.
Yeah.
There's nothing masking it. It's not synthetic. It's just like, this is what it is.
Yeah, it does taste like that, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you know what else, weirdly, it's given me a flashback to?
What?
When we went to Madeira.
Yeah.
And there was that guy making the wine next to the... And he had that little place next to the
room. Oh, my God, the ultimate place. That still...
That was one of my best Thai meals ever, by the way.
Me too. That was... honestly, it was such a... The memory is so visceral to me now. It's like, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it. Like, so there's a place on the north side of Madeira where you walk down to like these sort of rock baths. They've been carved out of the rock.
Natural swimming pools.
Natural swimming pools. But I don't know if they're fully natural. If they were like man-made kind of natural pools.
I think they might have had a little bit of cement reinforcing or something in their time. Yeah.
And like maybe a little bit of digging out. And there's obviously like ladders and stuff there and that. But... going in, swimming, cold water, hiking back up the hill.
Very
and
steep.
And then there's a butcher's shop on the side of the road that you buy skewers of meat, which is just beef with rock salt on. And then it gets so cooked on open fire, overlooking the sea with a fig tree. Because, by the way, for people who are listening, fig tree for me is like the most romantic tree there is, possibly competing with the cherry blossom trees.
I like a magnolia, personally. Sorry.
You know, we're each to their own. You are from further north than me, so magnolia makes a bit more sense.
Wait, what? Do you think that's a northern tree?
Well, I mean, it's definitely not a Mediterranean tree, is it? Magnolia?
No. I like a Mediterranean sea pine, but I don't know if I'd call it romantic.
Great
smell.
I feel like romance, that whole beauty in the eye of the observer or whatever. Mm. Maybe that's also
I think magnolias might even be... Sorry, I'm well getting distracted now. But, like, I think they're maybe, like, kind of Himalayan-esque. But that could be completely wrong.
I mean, if they are, it kind of also corresponds with my initial theory of them being from the Highlands. And as somebody who was born nearer to Scotland than me and lives in Scotland now, you're a northern lass.
It's definitely not a Scottish one. Anyway, that's probably a distraction too far. But yeah, sorry, back to the story. So basically, we had rock salt skewers, beef, cooked on an open wood fire on a steep cliff edge.
Overlooking where we just swam, and it felt like this primal experience. Also, because I fucking love red meat, like I do. Like I'm not...
It was delicious.
I haven't gone anywhere near the vegetarian veganism movement that's happening at the moment.
Same.
Obviously, I have small-scale farms, not buying industrial meat and everything, being caught... like conscious about it and not over excessing, but that was one of the best days of my life.
And then
the guy made his own red wine that was like juicy and fresh that you bought in Fanta bottles.
Yeah, like reused plastic bottles, which I'm here for, like, you know, a Coke bottle, a Fanta bottle, whatever he had, his own homemade wine with the little beef skewer and fresh crusty rolls.
Yeah.
That was it. I was in heaven.
I didn't even need the roll.
We had like plastic chairs. It looked kind of grotty.
Outside the furniture was like a Thai street food vendor, right? Yeah. It was like pretty basic, but that also like added to like how wonderful it was. It's like so unpretentious
and
raw.
It was pretty empty because we went in January.
But I also feel like whilst that was a wonderful memory, I also want to say that wine we just had's way fucking better.
Well, I know.
Just their wine.
I don't want to sound like I'm diminishing it, because there's lots more complexity and skill.
The Zapparoo boot.
You can taste it. But I think for me, it's more about that whole fresh.
Yeah.
The freshness and tasting the raw material as it is.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that.
Yeah, and it's the similar level of kind of heaviness and drinkability. And it was very drinkable.
It was. I mean,
I have a beef skewer now with salt?
Yeah, no, I have to whip the barbecue out. You're good at firing one up.
Next one.
Yeah, so we've already poured the next wine. So now we're on to Marabino Rossa di Contrada 2019. So Marabino, not too far, like a couple of hours drive from where Biagio and Vittorio are. So Pacchino. I'm always told by Italians that I say it wrong. So I'm always like, is it Pacchino? So sorry for anyone that's listening. They're like, oh my God, she's murdering that language. But not far from Noto, which obviously most people are familiar with, especially if they watch the second series of White Lotus.
I would like to go there.
Yeah, I mean, it's beautiful. Are you looking at me like, can I come sometime?
Yeah. Also, if anyone's listening to this and would like to host us for a further episode on tour, we've often discussed that how good it would be to do an on-tour episode. Not that I was actually a part of the series until now, but it's something that both Emily and myself have discussed many a time in a fantastical kind of way.
Our bag is packed, we're ready to come.
Yeah, we're here and ready to come and taste your beautiful wines.
Yeah. Anyway, back to near to Noto. Yeah. So, eastern coast of Sicily. It's a really beautiful part of the world. Marabino, 27 hectares, I believe, in total. 27, 29, I think it's 27. Pier Paolo, for me, is such an inspiring man. I think he makes some incredible wines. He is obsessed with wine. He is the ultimate wine nerd. Every time I've seen him, he is overflowing with enthusiasm for all the different things he's been exploring and drinking. And I think that's why he makes such great wines, is because he's somebody that is always drinking other wines from other places.
Which is really healthy. And I think as well, not just to stick in your like own country groove, because I think, not that I'm like an experienced person, but I feel like actually sometimes certain countries, if they do something really well, they sort of just stick to tasting their local competitors rather than the bigger picture. That's something I've picked up on. Yeah.
I mean, the same, so these two, like Biagio and Pier Paolo, so Biagio from the first wine, Pier Paolo, the second wine that we're trying now, they regularly meet and taste blind bottles together. And
that's nice.
And because they're both very curious people. And I think that speaks to the quality that you see in the wines.
Yeah.
What's very interesting to me about this wine, and why I truly, truly believe in this winery, and part of the decision of why we decided to import this, was because him and his style of winemaking and the wine that we're drinking today made me rethink this grape variety completely. So this is 100% Nero d'Avola.
Yeah.
I was always kind of like, Nero d'Avola. It's that grape variety that I really don't get, that I don't really like.
Okay.
It was a grape variety that often either was very simple, like cheap, kind of easy to drink, soft, so fine for like a house wine, or would be very thick, soupy, that kind of style that you talked about, where I'm like red wine soup, oaky red wine soup, lots of ripeness, lots of alcohol. But this is the opposite of that.
I do think, though, interestingly for me, again, on the more basic side, from what I know of Nero d'Avola, which is something that I could just pick up and just be like, that's just going to be a bog standard thing to have with like a spaghetti bolognese.
Yeah.
Like, not offensive, right?
Yeah.
And it is often good value.
But a bit boring.
Yeah. And it has those characteristics that you mentioned. But actually, weirdly, compared to the last one, I feel like it makes more sense now that it is a Nero d'Avola, because instantly I'm looking at it in the glass, it's a little bit darker. It has that slightly smoother taste and slightly more dense, to be fair, than the last one.
Yeah, but I mean, comparatively, we're still talking about 12% alcohol Nero d'Avola.
And it's not heavy. No. I'm just saying, compared to the fruity, fresh juiciness of the first one. And it kind of has, I don't think it's like the characteristics of the box, you know, like what you said, but it makes more sense to me, essentially, that it's that great.
Yeah, I mean, I also feel like the Frappato that we had before is like very atypical, very unexpected, very light, like one of the lightest red wines that you can drink. You know, like it's really like lace, whereas we're trying a wine now that is you know, there's some concentration to it, but still.
Still very fresh.
It's unbelievable. So this has, so again, not an early picked wine, like he's picking grapes in October. Biodynamic farming, all bush vines. And really, like, Nero Davola is the grape variety that is like their business card. So this is the entry level, if you like. But by far, by all means, I don't feel it's an entry level wine. I think it's a very serious wine. But what is very special about it is, like, there is this balance. I mean, there is this energy in the wine that I think I have not seen in any other producer of Nero Davola red wine that I've tried. And a lot of that comes, again, limestone soils and the way that he's farming. And when he grows the vines, he keeps the fruit set really close to the ground. And what that does is that when the hot air comes in, the Scirocco, it like compresses all the cold air down where the fruit is. So it's a very slow ripening period. Mm. And when he picks the grapes, for all the nerds that are listening and the wine people, for everyone else, like, I'm sorry, but like the acid levels, like the total acid levels are sometimes between 8 and 9.5 grams, which translates as a similar acid level as Mosel Riesling in Germany.
Well, that's
so cool. That is like insane levels, one for this grape, but also like when you look at it on the map, this is coming from a vineyard which horizontally is on the same level as Tunisia. It's bizarre to me, and it's like you've got a lot of sunshine, but it's this appropriate way of farming. It's really being, I mean, also this is a style that he really wants to enhance, this like linear style that's very fresh. So not using oak, using vessels that have freshness. So there's like a lot of stainless steel and concrete in the in the cellar, and like keeping that purity, you know.
Yeah, I think purity is a good word for it, actually. It's definitely got a lot more kind of, you can taste it feels less, I'd say, produced.
Yeah,
for me, like, you can, it feels like you can still like taste that fruit feeling that you get from the first one. It's just got a smoothness as well. And for context as well, this is the bottle, if you were looking at the photo, which is the white label with like a red paint smear.
And that's the winery, is the house, is the building, actually.
Oh, that's clever.
Yeah,
I didn't realize that. Yeah,
I mean, I only know because I've been there. But I think what's very interesting as well was when I was there, when I went on this same trip with Arlene, and we went to visit, we went for lunch near to the coast.
Nice.
Not far from it.
I feel like you're just rubbing my face in it now.
Well, you're okay. You can come with me. Come with us next time.
Yeah.
And Pier Paolo took us to a restaurant where we had red mullet.
Nice.
That was cooked whole in salt.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it wasn't red mullet, but I think it was just mullet. And honestly, both of us, and she's Canadian, it was like one of the best pieces of fish ever tasted, the flavor, the texture, everything. And we had a Nero Davola with it, and he was like, traditionally we always have red wine and we would always have something like Nero Davola with fish here in Sicily. And I was like, it's very interesting because everything you're taught, like, and this is very much my journey of like unconditioning myself from like a lot of this learning I got from outdated information in the beginning part of my career of like, this is how you do food and wine pairing, there are rules for this, there are rules for this. A lot of that is like absolutely redundant. Like obviously there is stuff that's like helpful. The geography part's helpful. But traditionally here, the local people would have a light red with white fish. Not with red fish, with white fish over a white wine. And there's white wines made around there, but this is what they would drink with it. And it was absolutely delicious.
I can see that would actually still be really good.
And especially with this style of Nero Davola, right? Like,
yeah, it's not too tannic in that sense.
No. And it's got like red and black fruit.
And it's still got acidity and it feels fresh.
Yum, 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 yum.
Yeah, it is really good. It's not what I would expect if you just thought Nero Davola.
Right. And you can, I mean, it's a red wine like the one before. This is a wine that makes sense in a wine bar, also makes sense in a restaurant. Mm. It's a wine that we were sitting, like we have been on the balcony, in the afternoon. You can chill it. You can drink it without food.
You could also just drink it not chilled.
Yeah.
Like, it's still, like, the right amount of refreshment.
But it's not, like, it's not demanding where you're, like, if when we start to get into sort of more tannic reds, where you're like, I need something to eat because it's starting to get, like, my mouth's getting dry and everything. This is...
Exactly,
yeah.
I think if you open the next one, I'm going to be really quiet so everyone can get the pleasure of the uncorking sound, because that's one of my favourite
bits. What you could do is drink what's in your glass.
Oh, yeah. God, that's the first time I've been told to drink up, ever.
I think it's the first time I've ever had to tell you that as well. Usually I'm like, you're like, give me more wine.
No, you're like, it's a bit like, all right. Where did that go?
Yeah.
Okay. Just because I'm savouring it so much.
Last bottle of wine. Vino Diana. Vendredi 13. Or Vendredi 13.
Oh, you need to be quiet to get the drink pour in the glass.
All right, okay. No, it's... I'm going to make sure every episode we record from here on out, I get this just for you, Nick.
It's like pervy drink people's crack. That's such a bad sentence. Pervy drink person.
Pervy drink person's crack.
Yeah, like... Okay, wine yep. fans. Wine fans. Catnip.
All of it. Okay, so for all of you pervs out there and all of you non-pervs, we're on Vendredi 13 or Vendredi 13 from Vino Diana 2021. And it's got like an amazing label. I think Michel Tolmer did the illustration, who most of us wine people know. He's responsible for a lot of labels and also different books and wine posters that are around. Like,
it's wonderful. Like me.
Yeah, so there's a woman who's basically in a swimming pool of magma, and there are three magma streams. One of them's pink, one of them's red, and one of them is yellow. And then you can see Etna in the background, and they're like the, you know, like the cigar, like smoking a cigar, which is what it's sort of famous for.
Smoke rings, yeah.
Yeah, because it's always smoking, right? Because it's an active volcano.
Yeah, and she's holding up a glass of wine, like, yay!
In full worship of what's going on.
Yeah.
So it's like, I love this label. So this wine is... You know, obviously the translation, the French translation is Friday the 13th.
Good day. My daughter was born on Friday the 13th.
So, okay. Good day for Margot and the De Vries family. But in this case, it's Friday the 13th as in unlucky Friday.
Or lucky for some.
Also, yeah.
That's the phrase.
Yeah, maybe. So, but in this case, it was unlucky for them because actually it was a challenging vintage where they didn't make the volumes of a lot of the wines that they would have made. So many people who know Vino Diana will know the Palmento wines, the Palmento Bianco, Palmento Rosso. These weren't made in 2021. And this particular wine is... Ooh. A kind of Frankenstein wine, if you like. But mm-hmm. I don't want to use Frankenstein in the way of like a mishmash kind of mix, but like a considered blend where a lot of parts that would have usually been vinified separately were put together. And some of those parts were also vinified separately. So I believe there was some Palmento Rosso, Palmento Bianco, Jeudi 15 Rosato. Those three wines were not made individually, so they went into this, and then a little bit of Jeudi 15 Rosso went in, and I think a little bit of CR Rosso, the top wine, also went in. Okay. So it's predominantly it's predominantly Nerello Mascalese, which is the queen of grapes on Etna. I always describe it as a grape variety that if Pinot Noir and Nebbiola had a baby, that would
such
be their
a
love
good
child.
I love that.
And also in a volcanic place. So you get obviously volcanic expression. I'm obsessed with volcanic wine. So there's always that smokiness. But it's got that lovely savouriness, aromatic quality.
Yeah.
Not quite as tannic as Nebbiolo, but still much more structured and tannic than Pinot Noir.
Yes.
And then also being on volcanic soil, you get that intensity and that intensity of flavour, but that also like smoky intensity in the wines in general with the grape. So this is predominantly that, but there's a small amount of white grapes in there. There's a small amount of Nero d'Avola. There's a small amount of Nerello Mascalese Rosé in there too. And it's a one-off wine. This will never be made again, hopefully. And if it does, it'll be a different wine because this is a wine that really expresses the vintage. This is a wine that actually really excites me because when you're a small artisan producer and you're really working with nature, you're not working in an industrial sense, you can't fix everything with chemicals, you can't manipulate it in the cellar, you have to pivot, you have to be flexible, you have to find a way to follow nature.
And be creative.
And this is a wine that really illustrates that. And I really have a lot of respect to Anna and Eric for producing this wine and standing behind it. And also they chose to do this and sort of some of their wines that are more expensive put it into here to make a better wine, but also release it at a good price that still made it accessible to people. So high praise to this. And for those people that don't know the winery, Vino Diana Eric Nauru, Anna Martins. Anna Martins, Australian. Eric Nauru, Frenchman. Eric, I met before I met Anna. He was behind the first natural wine bar in London, Terroirs. Also behind other restaurants like Braun. Big importer of natural wine. Okay, massive, first, Le Cave de Prenne, put on the Real Wine Fair. He's a very humble person, hides behind the scenes. A lot of people, you would never know that if you met him, like, very, very humble. And his wife, Anna, is from South Australia. She's a very dynamic person. She's tiny, but she's got this incredible energy and personality that she's just, like, very magnetic person. So they're a wonderful team together. They purchased...
That's a lovely description, by the way.
Ah, yeah, but they are amazing people. They're very impressive. And they bought the winery in 2010, and then they started producing wine a couple of years later. And I've been tasting, because I was buying wine at that point in London. So I got to taste with Anna when she first released the wines, and I followed them the whole way. And we've been importing them in Germany since 18 or 19 now. So it's been a while. And yeah, they're working with about 7 hectares in total, all biodynamically farmed.
So that's huge, is it?
No, and they make about 40,000 bottles. The yields are very low. Mm-hmm. So they're now considered one of the top producers on Etna. And for me, they'll always be my number one because I have an emotional kind of connection to them, but also because I really, really just fucking love drinking the wines. So there you go. Yeah. Big spiel, but you got the full...
So again, this is quite different again. So I guess I can see why you ordered it like this. Because yeah. We're going, unsurprisingly, we started with the freshest and lightest one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I also think when I'm drinking volcanic wines, or if I'm serving volcanic wines in a kind of lineup, I'll always put volcanic wines at the end. Because of the expression of the soil and the intensity of the wines, they can be overpowering, and when you try wine after, it can make the other wines that are not volcanic feel flat after.
No, it wouldn't have worked the other way
so
around.
Yes, so even if we'd had like a 14% or 15% wine that was a bit oaky, I'd still put this at the end, because this is like, I mean, I put volcanic wines on wine lists under a category called volcanic S&M, which is a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek thing, but then it's like, and then I write underneath smoky and mineral, but it's like, they're bracing wines that are so intense that they can be very challenging, and they go to your limits. So like, it's hard to like follow this up with something.
That is such a good description. I always associate you actually with a love of volcanic wine.
Yeah.
And surprisingly, given how often you've been to those sort of islands recently, but yeah. This is definitely...
Well, when we're in Madeira, volcanic island.
I know.
So maybe Sicily's our next one.
I really want to go to Sicily. I was meant to go like a couple of years ago in 2021. And the stars did not align. I had booked things and then it just... They actually cancelled our flights because of the volcano thing. And
erupting.
Yeah.
Damn you, nature. Standing in our way. What are you doing? We're supposed to be in control.
The volcano thing, you know, that thing.
I know we don't have so long left, but I would love to know what you think of this wine.
It's so interesting compared to the others as well, because it's definitely a step change, but yep. Still equally vibrant, yep. I'd say. It's really like, it's still fruity, but the smoky thing... I feel like
a bit more tannin, a bit more structure,
a little bit
crunchy.
For me, it's not heavier alcoholic wise, but it has that intensity, I guess is probably the better word.
Yeah.
That the others had less of.
Yeah, so we've gone from 11% to 12% to 13% ABV, but I think there definitely is structure, but they're like the intensity of flavor. With volcanic wine, it's just like, for me, I feel like that soil is like an amplifier.
Oh.
It's like,
I also think it's a lot more savoury.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
There's an earthiness that's there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you've gone from, like, super light, freshy, kind of almost a cordial, if you like, at the beginning, which, why would you not want a wine cordial? But now we're, like, slightly more savoury, punchy, vibrant, juicy.
Yeah.
And it's still not, it doesn't feel overly alcoholic. Like the 13% step, I don't feel like that feels, it doesn't feel like that.
Yeah, it's not heavy wine.
No. And it's not cloying, and it's still got like a light kind of look in the glass. I just think it feels bigger in a way, or more structured or whatever.
Yeah, I find wines from volcanic soil thrilling, and Etna is definitely one of my sort of like, there's a little piece of my heart in Etna where I'm just like, this was like one of my wine places in the world where I just
I need to go.
Yeah, next time you coming.
Yeah.
Sit in the back seat. It's always empty, so I never sit there because I always get car sick.
I get car sick.
Well, you're going to have to suck that up. Arlene doesn't, so she might concede to the back seat. You can ask her tonight when we have dinner. Okay, so that's a little bit, I think, a glimpse into what I think is some of the exciting things. Obviously, there's so many exciting producers in Sicily at the moment, but I do feel these are three producers that I am very thrilled about that do represent, like, let's say, new wave Sicilian wine in the last decade and the potential of what could be really, really interesting. There's way more happening. We've just done a snapshot into like three reds and we're focusing on the east, but there obviously are many other grapes, a lot of white, a lot of orange, a lot of rosé that's brilliant. But yeah, so hopefully for those of you that want to explore a little bit more, these might be good introductions.
I think for me, what's interesting is that you've picked three that are like so drinkable, as in easy drinking, and actually coming through, like, we're now hitting spring properly, it's gonna get warmer, and I think all of these drinks for red, for me, people naturally go, oh, I'm out of red wine now. Actually, no, these give you like a longevity into like sort of red flavors, but in a really refreshing, drinkable, summery way. Like, they totally work. Like, that's a good season that we're, you know, that we're hitting. They're not necessarily like they would work in winter. But for me, it feels like really right, actually, to be having these right now after like a really lovely 16 degrees, sunny, but, you know, t-shirt weather day. And I think that's quite interesting because I never would have thought Sicilian reds would be like this, as you said. And yeah, I just think, can you also start, please, importing wine into the UK so I don't have to buy it off other people?
No, but I can also get the wines from... I can get the wines for you.
I know, but it would just make my life easier.
Or you just drive to see me in Berlin and then I can load up your and Andy's car with wine for the year.
I just quite like, yeah, I always love your
Or when I come and see you in Edinburgh, I'll just make sure that, like, I'll be like, I'm wearing all your clothes from Second Stories for a few days and I've bought you, like, 24 bottles of wine. Anyway, so I think we'll wrap up here. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in and staying with us. And once again, the wines that we did try today was the 2022 Zappa Iputa Herpato from Agricola V&B.
That's the one with the two guys in quite a highly illustrated format and a then simplistic umbrella format of red wine above them.
And then we tried the Marabino Rossa di Contrada Nero d'Avola 2019.
Lovely again. And white label, little red smear representing the building I now know.
And then we've got the 2021 Vendredi 13 or Vendredi 13 from Vino di Anna.
Yeah, blonde lady in the lake of Magna holding up a wine glass celebrating the volcano.
Yeah.
Like, I like to do that because I'm such a visual person that I need to be...
No, I actually love that you did that because it happened, again, unplanned, but I'm like, I should do this. This should be part of the podcast. So, yeah. And I would like to extend my thanks to my dear friend Nikki DeVries from Second Stories for being here today and being a wonderful co-host. And Nikki will reappear sporadically.
Yes.
And very happy to have you here. So for those of you that want to find out or follow Nikki, your Instagram is...
So if you want to follow me, thank you, firstly. But my Instagram is second_stories_. Which is not very visual, but looking at it, it's easier. And my website is www.secondstories.co.uk. So that's www.secondstories.co.uk.
Okay, great. The written thing kind of threw me off there because I was like, is your website secondstoriewritten.co.uk?
Well, you know, like,
I'm glad you clarified.
Not second numerical.
Oh, you mean S-E-C-O-N-D. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, cool. And for those of you that don't follow Juice on Instagram, why the hell are you not? I'm joking. But you can follow us at juice.podcast. And I'm on Instagram.
I didn't know you had an Instagram for juice. I don't follow it.
That is disgusting.
It's disgusting. Fucking hell. What have I been doing?
I think I'm going to unfollow all of your accounts. Isn't that what we do these days? We just like cancel people. I'm joking.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do that. But we do have an Instagram, Nikki, so you better start following. And juice.podcast. And you can also find me on my other nerdy Instagram, which is Vina Lupa, VinaLupa, which I also have a website, which is www.vinalupa.com. And thank you all for tuning in. I'm Emily Harmon, and
I'm Nikki DeVries. Cheers.
Cheers.
Ooh.
Nice one.